Okay, let's unpack this. The whole landscape of aging, it's really undergoing a profound transformation, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And its impact on healthcare is, well, it's revolutionary.
Yeah, we're not just talking about small changes here. It feels like a fundamental shift in how we live, how long we live, and, what that actually means for our health, our well-being.
Exactly.
And this, of course, has huge implications for you listening in as nursing students. You're preparing to step into a profession that's going to be increasingly serving an older population.
That's right.
So this deep dive, it's really dedicated to equipping you with the essential insights, the practical tools for navigating this really nuanced but honestly incredibly rewarding world of geriatric mental health and holistic assessment. Our mission today, it's pretty clear. We're going to rigorously compare what's considered normal, age-related changes with actual mental health problems in older adults.
Which is such a critical distinction to make.
It really is.
Yeah.
And then we'll meticulously delineate the crucial areas for a comprehensive psychiatric nursing assessment, making sure you can provide truly person-centered care.
Right.
And what's absolutely foundational to remember is that aging itself, it's a natural developmental process.
Yeah.
It's not a disease to be cured. Understanding that difference is like the bedrock you'll build your expertise on.
And what's truly fascinating here, and I think often overlooked, is just the sheer depth of complexity
Yeah.
and the immense personal and professional rewards that come with working with older adults, particularly around their mental
It
health.
gets stereotyped, doesn't it?
It really does. There's this persistent societal tendency to kind of pigeonhole older individuals, to lean on these outdated stereotypes about what aging means for someone's cognitive or emotional capabilities. But our deep dive today, well, it's going to challenge those assumptions head on. We'll be extracting key insights directly from our sources, translating, complex information into immediately applicable strategies for your future nursing practice.
So practical takeaways.
Exactly. This isn't just about accumulating facts. It's about cultivating a truly holistic understanding, one that empowers you to move beyond those generalizations and instead provide incredibly compassionate, highly effective, and deeply personalized care.
Right.
You'll learn to approach each older adult you encounter with the unique nuance and respect they absolutely deserve.
And what a critical thing that is for our future healthcare system. Okay, let's start by grounding ourselves in the stark realities of our changing world. Specifically, the striking demographic shifts that define this new era of longevity. For generations, the chronological age of 65 years, that's been the traditional marker for elderly in the U.S.
Yeah, the standard cutoff.
But the numbers behind this category are just staggering.
Yeah.
Think back to the turn of the 20th century, like the 1900s. The average life expectancy in the U.S. was, what, a mere 47 years?
47, it's hard to even imagine now.
It really is, less than half a century. Now, fast forward to just a few years ago, 2016, and that number had soared to almost 80 years, 78.8
An
years.
incredible leap.
It's monumental, a testament to public health, medicine, living conditions. But here's where it gets really interesting and directly relevant for you, our future nurses.
Okay.
Projections indicate that by the year 2050, a significant chunk of the American population, specifically 1 in 5 people, will be considered elderly.
1 in 5. Wow.
Exactly. This means that throughout your entire professional careers, you are guaranteed to be interacting with and caring for an unprecedented number of older adults.
Yeah.
This isn't just some abstract statistic. It's a fundamental reshaping of the patient population you will serve.
Yeah.
It demands specialized knowledge, a unique skill set.
That demographic shift truly requires a fundamental reevaluation of how we approach healthcare. It really reinforces a crucial yet often misunderstood concept. Aging is not inherently a disease.
Right.
It's a natural, highly individualized process. We often fall into the trap of, confusing the two, sort of assuming that as people get older, they inevitably get sicker.
Which isn't fair or accurate.
Not at all. It's an oversimplification and honestly, a potentially harmful misconception that can lead to misdiagnosis, inappropriate care. Now, it is true that longevity brings with it an increased prevalence of chronic conditions. Our sources highlight that about 80% of individuals over 70 live with at least one chronic condition.
80%.
Yeah, and roughly half of them manage multiple chronic conditions at the same time, things like hypertension, diabetes, arthritis, heart disease.
Usual suspects. often.
Pretty much. But the critical distinction is that these are conditions often manageable, not necessarily a decline directly caused by aging as some kind of pathological state.
Okay, so that raises a really important question for nurses then, doesn't it?
Exactly. How do we accurately and effectively differentiate between these expected age-related physiological changes, you know, the natural wear and tear, if you will, and actual pathological conditions or mental health problems that really need medical intervention?
That's the challenge.
It is. And this is precisely where your role as a nurse becomes incredibly nuanced and, frankly, impactful. Our sources strongly emphasize that focusing on an individual's functional abilities is far more telling than their chronological age.
Functional age, okay.
Yeah, the ability to perform activities of daily living, ADLs, you know, basic stuff like bathing, dressing, feeding oneself, getting around.
Right.
That often provides a far more accurate measure of a person's functional age than just looking at their birth year. So for you, as nursing students, this means actively adopting a truly patient-centered view.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Imagine two people.
Yeah.
One's 85, walks 2 miles a day, lives independently, manages their own finances. The other is 65, multiple chronic illnesses, struggles significantly with personal hygiene, preparing meals.
Okay.
Chronological age tells you very little about their actual needs or capabilities in that comparison, right?
Right. The 85-year-old sounds much more functionally young.
Exactly. So your focus has to be on what an individual can do, their current level of independence, and what specific supports they need to maintain or improve their quality of life, not just the number on the calendar.
That functional assessment is like your real compass then.
Precisely. It guides everything.
That distinction, chronological versus functional age, that's absolutely vital. It really shifts our perspective from just counting years to looking at actual capabilities.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's dig a bit deeper into what truly changes, and maybe more surprisingly, what often doesn't change as part of this normal aging process.
Okay.
On one hand, yeah, there are some undeniable expected physical adjustments. Our sources indicate that with normal aging, you'll typically see a gradual decrease in sensory abilities.
Mm-hmm.
Vision, hearing.
Right. Not just a minor inconvenience. Vision might become less sharp. Hearing can diminish. Taste and smell can dull. Even touch sensitivity might change. These aren't diseases themselves, just normal physiological shifts.
Right. Part of the package. Exactly. Beyond sensory changes, there can also be a reduction in pulmonary function. Lungs become less efficient, and a gradual decrease in immune system responsiveness.
Making them potentially more susceptible to infections, slower recovery?
Yeah, exactly. It's crucial to acknowledge these realities as part of the natural course of life.
But, and here's where the nuance is so critically important for your nursing practice, and it's a point that often gets, well, misunderstood.
Okay.
Many profoundly important functions often remain constant or sometimes even strengthen despite these physical shifts. It's a powerful counter-narrative to those common ageist stereotypes.
Like what specifically?
Well, for instance, and this might surprise a lot of people, general intellectual function, meaning intelligence, problem-solving abilities, overall cognitive capacity, typically stays remarkably stable throughout a person's life.
Really? So the idea of inevitable cognitive decline is a myth.
Largely, yes, in normal aging. Now, the speed of processing information might slow down a bit.
Okay, that makes sense.
But the ability to learn, to reason, to engage in complex thought, that doesn't inherently diminish just because someone gets older.
That's huge.
It is. Older adults absolutely retain their capacity for change. They can and do learn new things, adapt to new environments, master new technologies, embrace new ideas.
So that whole can't teach an old dog new tricks thing is just wrong.
Pretty much, yeah. Their potential for productive engagement with life, whether it's continuing work, pursuing hobbies passionately, volunteering, community leadership, often endures vibrantly.
So the implication for nursing care is don't make assumptions.
Exactly. You have to actively, consciously resist making assumptions about cognitive decline or an inability to learn new information in your older patients.
Assuming they can't grasp complex medication schedules or participate in care planning.
Right. It's not only a disservice to them, but it fundamentally hinders your ability to provide effective, empowering support. Their minds are often just as sharp, capable, and curious as ever, even if their bodies are experiencing some normal, non-pathological changes.
That understanding really empowers us to approach every patient with respect for their cognitive abilities, their autonomy.
Oh, absolutely.
That's such an important perspective shift.
Right.
Okay, so now, with that foundation, distinguishing normal aging from disease, let's zero in on the specific mental health challenges that are, you know, most common in older adults.
Right, because certain conditions do disproportionately affect this group.
And their presentation can be quite different, right?
Very different, yeah.
So our sources consistently identify three of the most common mental health issues in older adults as depression, anxiety, and dementia.
Mm-hmm. And it's worth noting, as you said, dementia is technically a medical diagnosis, a neurological condition.
Right.
But its profound impact on mental status, emotional regulation, overall functioning makes it absolutely crucial to consider in the mental health context.
Definitely. So, okay, to really understand this as nursing students, you need to be exceptionally tuned in to these specific conditions. Why? Because, like we're about to discuss, their signs and symptoms in an older adult can be subtle, they can be masked, or even atypical compared to what you might see in younger people.
Which makes accurate identification and timely intervention so, so critical for their well-being and quality of life.
Exactly.
And what truly makes geriatric mental health so unique and often complex is precisely how these conditions tend to show up. It's not just a slight variation, it's often a characteristic difference that demands really keen observation and a refined assessment approach from you.
How so?
Well, unlike younger individuals who might more readily say, I feel sad or I'm anxious, older adults are frequently more likely to report somatic symptoms.
Physical complaints, you mean?
Exactly. Physical complaints rather than directly expressing psychological distress. So imagine this. Instead of saying, I feel incredibly sad and overwhelmed, an older patient might come to you with persistent back pain, unexplained fatigue, generalized aches.
Saying something like, my body just hurts all the time, or I'm always so tired.
Precisely. It's like that check engine light in a car. The light itself isn't the problem, but it tells you something deeper is wrong and you need to look beyond the surface symptom.
Making diagnosis really tricky.
Incredibly tricky, because the underlying emotional distress is kind of cloaked in physical discomfort.
And then you add in the comorbidities.
Yes. Adding to this complexity is that high prevalence of comorbidities we talked about earlier. Many older adults are managing multiple chronic physical conditions at the same time, heart disease, diabetes, arthritis, maybe COPD.
Right.
The symptoms of these physical conditions or even the side effects from the handfuls of medications they might be taking to manage them. Polypharmacy can often powerfully mask or even mimic mental health issues.
Can you give an example of that masking?
Sure. Think about the fatigue associated with a cardiac condition like congestive heart failure. That could easily be mistaken as purely a symptom of depression. Or flip it, the lack of energy that comes with depression might be blamed solely on a physical illness.
Mm.
Or consider certain blood pressure medications. Some can actually induce depressive symptoms. Or anticholinergic drugs, which are common, can cause confusion that looks a lot like early dementia.
Oh, wow. Okay, so the implications for nursing students are pretty profound then.
They really are. Your assessment skills have to be exceptionally sharp. You almost need to be like a medical detective.
Looking beyond the obvious physical complaints.
Exactly. Thinking critically, diligently connecting the dots between potential physical and psychological presentations. It means asking thoughtful, probing questions, exploring their entire health history, carefully considering all possible contributing factors.
Trying to distinguish, say, fatigue from a heart issue versus fatigue from depression, or maybe both interacting?
Precisely. Your ability to untangle those threads, that's going to be absolutely crucial for effective care.
That really highlights the intricate detective work involved in geriatric psychiatric nursing. Okay, so faced with such a complex mix of physical, emotional, social factors, how do we systematically approach understanding the whole person?
Mm-hmm.
This brings us to the holistic assessment framework, which sounds like it serves as your essential blueprint, right, for comprehensive geriatric psychiatric nursing.
That's a great way to put it, a blueprint or a roadmap.
So what does this all mean for your practice?
Mm.
Think of this comprehensive holistic assessment, not just as, you know, a task to check off,
right,
but as your detailed roadmap, your personalized navigation system to truly understand the entire person sitting in front of you, not just their symptoms.
Mm-hmm. The whole picture.
It's about consciously recognizing that every aspect of an older adult's life, their physical health, emotional state, social connections, living environment, even spiritual beliefs, they're all deeply interconnected and profoundly influence their overall well-being and mental health.
You can't separate them.
Exactly. The ultimate goal here is to move way beyond generalizations about aging and instead develop a unique, really individualized understanding of the aging process for each specific patient you see.
Which allows you to truly see and care for them as the complex, unique individual they are, honoring their life story, their current reality.
Sounds much more respectful, too.
It absolutely is. And to achieve that truly individualized understanding, our sources outline three core interconnected domains. Think of them as the pillars of a comprehensive geropsychiatric nursing assessment.
Okay, what are they?
First, there's the biophysical assessment. This is all about the body's story. Current physical health, past medical history, current physical functioning, how all these physiological bits are impacting their daily life.
Makes sense. Pillar one, biophysical.
Right. Second, the psychological domain. This focuses on the landscape of their mind and emotions. Here we assess mental status, mood, cognition, and critically, their coping mechanisms, their resilience.
Pillar two, psychological.
Mm-hmm. And third, but definitely not least, is the social domain. This pillar evaluates the patient's external world, their living environment, their support systems, cultural background, the broader social determinants of their health.
Pillar three, social. So biophysical, psychological, social.
Exactly. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, it becomes crystal clear that these three domains aren't separate silos. They're deeply organically interconnected.
You need all three for the full picture.
Absolutely essential. You need to assess all of them comprehensively to develop truly effective, person-centered care plans. Imagine trying to understand a complex patient's depression without knowing about their chronic pain that's biophysical, or their history of anxiety, psychological, or their recent loss of a spouse and social isolation that's social.
Yeah, you'd be missing huge pieces.
Exactly. Missing a piece of the puzzle from any one of these pillars inevitably leads to an incomplete, maybe even inaccurate, picture of the patient. And that can severely hinder your ability to provide truly comprehensive, compassionate, effective care. Each domain gives critical, indispensable context that informs and shapes the others.
Right. Let's really dive deeper into that first foundational pillar then, the biophysical domain. Because like you said, the body often holds and tells a huge part of the story.
It really does.
A comprehensive physical health review within this domain sounds fundamental to getting that complete picture of an older adult.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't just a quick checklist, is it? It involves meticulously detailing their past medical history,
mm-hmm.
PMH, looking at past diagnoses, surgeries, significant health events.
Right, the whole history matters.
And it requires a thorough understanding of their nutrition and eating patterns. Why is that so important?
Well, because dietary deficiencies or even just struggles with preparing meals can profoundly impact energy levels, mood, even cognitive function. Malnutrition is a huge issue.
Okay. And we also need to assess elimination patterns, bowel and bladder function.
Yes, because issues like constipation or incontinence, they can cause significant distress, social isolation, and even feed into mental health challenges like anxiety or depression about leaving the house.
Makes sense. Sleep patterns, too.
Critical. Chronic insomnia or just fragmented sleep can definitely exacerbate depression, anxiety, and cognitive difficulties. Everything feels harder when you're exhausted.
True. And pain assessment.
Paramount. Chronic pain can be just a relentless burden, leading to feelings of hopelessness, depression, a really reduced quality of life. We have to ask about it specifically.
And of course, the pharmacologic assessment. Medications.
Vital, especially with polypharmacy being so common. You need to scrutinize all medications prescribed, over-the-counter supplements, herbals.
Everything.
To identify potential drug interactions or side effects that could be mimicking mental health symptoms like confusion, lethargy, mood changes.
So understanding these physical aspects isn't just about treating the body.
Not at all. It's critical because they can directly and often profoundly influence an older adult's mental health, their mood stability, their overall sense of well-being.
Okay.
And what's really fascinating here is how these normal age-related physiological changes can show up across pretty much every system in the body. Understanding these subtle shifts helps you as nurses distinguish them from actual pathology.
Right. Telling normal from not normal.
Exactly. Let's walk through some key systems. For the integumentary system, the skin, you'll naturally see changes like thinning, increased fragility, less elasticity, slower wound healing.
So higher risk for skin breakdown.
Definitely. Need to be vigilant. The musculoskeletal system will show variations in muscle strength, bone density, flexibility, potentially affecting mobility, increasing fall risk. When we look at the cardiovascular system, older adults face an increased risk of dysrhythmias, irregular heartbeats, and potentially reduced cardiac output, so the heart's less efficient at pumping blood.
Less oxygen to organs.
Right. They also have higher susceptibility to things like hypertension or heart failure. And the implication for nursing here is huge. You have to learn to recognize the often subtle, atypical signs of cardiac distress.
Different from younger adults.
Often, yes. For instance, a seemingly harmless persistent cough or unexplained fatigue, or even a sudden bout of confusion in his older adult. That could actually be an atypical sign of heart failure, not just a cold or old age. Requires a keen eye.
Wow. Okay. What about respiratory?
Respiratory system typically sees decreased pulmonary function, lung capacity, elasticity reduced, which can lead to shortness of breath, especially with exertion.
Gastrointestinal.
Gastrointestinal system shows changes in digestion, nutrient absorption, elimination patterns, can contribute to constipation, malnourishment.
Genitourinary
system can present with increased urinary frequency, urgency, maybe stress incontinence, issues that can really impact quality of life, social confidence.
Okay. And speaking of body systems, our sources highlighted a really important, maybe often overlooked point about the reproductive system that might genuinely surprise some students.
Ah, yes.
It was summed up perfectly by that phrase, they're old, not dead.
Chuckles. It's wonderfully direct, isn't it?
It is. And it's a crucial reminder that many older adults not only maintain sexual activity, but also keep an interest in intimacy and connection.
An area that's frequently just ignored, or worse, dismissed with assumptions of inactivity. It really impacts patient dignity.
So as nurses.
As nurses, it's absolutely imperative not to make assumptions about a lack of sexual activity or interest in this population. It means approaching sexual health assessments respectfully, professionally, integrating it as a vital part of the holistic picture.
Because ignoring it diminishes them.
Exactly. It can inadvertently diminish their identity, relationship satisfaction, overall sense of self-worth. It also means considering things like safe sex practices, STI screening, often forgotten in older populations. And all of this profoundly affects mental and emotional health.
Right. Okay. Neurological system.
Moving to the neurological system, we see a natural decrease in the number of neurons and neurotransmitters, the brain's chemical messengers. Now, while processing speed may slow down a bit,
takes longer to respond or learn something new.
Potentially, yes. But, and this is critical to remember, general intelligence and wisdom generally remain constant. It is not a decline in intellect.
Okay.
Very key. There can also be potential normal changes in sleep architecture leading to more fragmented sleep. For nursing, this means pacing your communication, allowing more processing time using clear, concise language.
And learning to distinguish that normal slowing from true cognitive decline, like dementia.
Precisely. That's a core skill.
Okay. Almost there. Endocrine and sensory.
Right. The endocrine system experiences hormonal changes, maybe decreased thyroid function, which can mimic depression symptoms, or changes in glucose regulation, increasing diabetes risk, which affects mood and cognition. And finally, the sensory system typically sees a gradual but significant decline across all senses. Vision, hearing, taste, touch, smell.
Which isn't just inconvenient.
Not at all. It can profoundly impact their interaction with the environment, their safety, social engagement. So your nursing implication is crucial. Adapt communication, speak clearly, face them, reduce noise. Ensure aids like glasses, hearing devices are used and working. Modify the environment for safety, good lighting, clear paths, accessible info.
That's an incredibly thorough journey through the body's story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so to actually get all this vital biophysical information, what are the techniques?
Good question. Our sources outline several essential data collection techniques here. You'll rely heavily on direct, sensitive interviews with the patient themselves, always prioritizing their perspective.
Their voice comes first.
Absolutely. But you'll also find immense value in talking with family members or close caregivers. They can often provide crucial collateral information details about changes they've seen, historical context, functional challenges the patient might downplay.
Mm-hmm.
Self-reporting, often using validated standardized tests or questionnaires, can give valuable subjective insights into areas like pain, sleep, nutrition.
Okay.
Then you integrate objective data. Current lab results, blood counts, electrolytes, medication levels, everything, and comprehensively review their past and present medical records.
So it's about combining everything.
Exactly. The key is not to rely on just one source, but to meticulously combine all these diverse inputs, the patient's voice, family input, objective tests, historical data, to build a truly robust, accurate, multidimensional picture of their biophysical health.
Got it. Okay, let's move to that second pillar, the psychological domain. This is delving into the mind and emotions, right? Understanding their internal world.
Precisely. Key areas here include their responses to health problems. How are they coping psychologically with chronic illness, a new diagnosis, functional limits? Are they resilient or showing significant distress, denial, despair?
How they're handling things.
Exactly. Then, a thorough mental status examination, the MSE, is foundational. And this isn't just about screening for dementia. It's a systematic assessment of appearance, behavior, speech, mood, affect, thought processes, thought content, perception, cognition, insight. The works.
The full mental checkup.
Pretty much. We also meticulously assess their mood and affect, looking for consistency, intensity, appropriateness, noting any mismatch between what they say and how they look.
Okay.
Understanding their thought processes and content. Are thoughts logical, coherent? Are there delusions, intrusive thoughts? That's crucial. Their cognition, memory, attention, executive function like planning and problem solving, orientation is carefully evaluated.
Looking for changes.
Yes. Any observed behavior changes new behaviors. Significant shifts in existing patterns are important clues. And finally, evaluating their stress coping mechanisms helps us understand their resilience, their usual strategies for adversity, their potential vulnerabilities.
So what does this all mean for you, the nurse?
It means this domain directly helps you understand the patient's internal experience, how they perceive their world, and how they are psychologically navigating the often challenging landscape of aging. It's empathy informed by sharp clinical observation.
Within that vital psychological domain, though, there's one area that demands incredibly serious, unwavering attention from every future nurse: risk assessment. Specifically, suicide risk in older adults.
Critical area.
This isn't just a theoretical concern, is it? It's a critical, often under-recognized issue that you absolutely must be aware of and prepared to address.
It really is. And this raises an incredibly important, often uncomfortable question.
Yeah.
One, we, as healthcare professionals, have to approach directly, empathetically, and without hesitation.
Okay. What are the key risk factors we need to know?
Our sources highlight several key risk factors for suicide in older adults, often distinct from younger groups. These include a history of past suicide attempts, always a major red flag needing immediate action. A family history of suicide also increases risk. A particularly alarming high-risk factor mentioned specifically is the ready presence of firearms in the home.
Increases lethality dramatically.
Hugely. Substance abuse, alcohol, other drugs also significantly elevates risk by impairing judgment, increasing impulsivity. Chronic medical conditions, especially those causing persistent unmanageable pain, functional decline, or that profound sense of being a burden.
That feeling of being a burden seems powerful.
It's a powerful, destructive internal narrative that can really drive suicidal thoughts. Social isolation, which is so pervasive for many older adults, exacerbates loneliness and hopelessness.
And major stress.
Yes, unusual or overwhelming stress, like recent bereavement, financial hardship, a sudden loss of independence can be a trigger.
So the implication for nursing students is you have to assess this.
Cannot be overstated. Your role in screening, comprehensive assessment, and immediate intervention for these risks is absolutely vital. This often means asking direct, sensitive, open-ended questions about suicidal ideation.
Like, are you having thoughts of harming yourself? Or do you ever wish you weren't here?
Exactly. It's not only necessary and appropriate, it's often life-saving to ensure your patient's safety. Hmm. Never, ever shy away from this critical conversation. Your willingness to ask can literally open the door to hope and help.
That's a sobering but incredibly important point.
All right.
Okay, let's shift focus now to the third pillar, the social domain. Moving beyond the individual's body and mind to their external world, environment, relationships, connections.
Mm-hmm. The context of their life.
So to really understand this, this domain provides absolutely crucial context for your understanding of the patient's overall well-being, doesn't it?
Absolutely. An individual, especially an older adult, doesn't exist in a vacuum. Their social fabric, cultural background, environmental circumstances, they deeply, powerfully influence mental and physical health. It's where the personal meets the public.
Right.
And the social domain is paramount because it helps us understand that context, which is indispensable for providing truly holistic care. Important areas for assessment here include their living arrangements.
Like, do they live alone, with family, assisted living? Are they homeless?
Exactly. Each scenario brings unique challenges, unique opportunities. Their cultural and educational background is also a key lens. It shapes health beliefs, willingness to discuss mental health, interactions with the healthcare system.
Can you give an example there?
Sure. A patient from a culture where mental illness is heavily stigmatized might be very hesitant to express feelings of depression or anxiety. That requires a more sensitive, indirect, trust-building approach from you as the nurse.
Got it. What else in the social domain?
We also meticulously assess the presence and quality of family support and interactions. Are relationships supportive, or are there dynamics causing stress or neglect?
Mm-hmm.
Beyond family, there are broader social support network, friends, community groups, religious affiliations, neighbors that gauges their connection and belonging. Their functional status, how they manage daily life within their environment, is a practical measure of independence and support needs.
Community resources, too.
Yes. Evaluating available social systems and community resources, senior centers, meal delivery, transport, mental health support groups, these can be critical lifelines. Performing a spiritual assessment is also vital. Understanding their beliefs, practices, how these inform coping, give meaning, influence resilience.
Legal status.
Yeah.
Quality of life.
Yes. Legal status, guardianship, powers of attorney, and crucially, their own perceptions of quality of life, which is deeply subjective and personal. That completes this intricate social picture.
The implication for nursing students seems unequivocally clear then.
It is. These myriad social factors can either be powerful buffers against mental health challenges, providing resilience and support.
Or they can make things much worse.
Exactly. They can significantly exacerbate existing problems, leading to more isolation, stress, decline. Understanding this allows you to effectively connect patients to resources, advocate for their social and environmental needs, and provide truly contextualized, comprehensive care that goes way beyond medical symptoms.
Addressing the totality of their lived experience. That comprehensive look at the social domain really completes our understanding of the whole person. Okay, so this brings us to some very practical yet incredibly powerful points for actually doing these comprehensive assessments. The principles for effective assessment, the techniques to make those vital connections.
Right. The how-to.
It all starts with creating the right environment, doesn't it? Ensuring a non-distracting assessment space, free from noise, interruptions, hurried energy.
Mm-hmm. Setting the stage.
And here's where it gets really interesting. Why is this seemingly simple step so critical for accurate data collection with older adults?
Well, because many older individuals experience some degree of sensory decline, hearing loss, vision loss, or they might have that slightly slower cognitive processing speed we talked about.
Okay.
A calm, quiet environment allows them to focus their attention, process information at their own pace without feeling rushed, and feel significantly more comfortable and safe sharing sensitive personal details. It's about respecting their sensory and cognitive capacities and just setting them up for success.
Makes perfect sense. And building on that environmental setup, effective communication strategies are key.
Absolutely paramount for your interactions. First, always pace the interview based on the patient's individual capacity and observable processing speed.
Slow down.
Allow time. Exactly. Consciously slow down, allow ample time for them to formulate thoughts and responses. Rushing an older adult leads to frustration, anxiety, and often inaccurate or incomplete information.
Okay, what's next?
Second, use short, clear communication. Avoid long, complex sentences or medical jargon. Break questions down into simpler parts.
Like instead of, tell me about the etiology of your chronic pain and its impact on functional status.
Right, you'd ask, where does it hurt? How bad is the pain? What does it stop you from doing? Simpler, direct, provide time for them to respond, be comfortable with silence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Third, and this is a really valuable therapeutic technique, actively allow time for reminiscence.
Not just small talk.
No, it's a powerful tool. Encouraging older adults to share stories, memories from their past helps build rapport, trust, makes them feel valued, heard. Plus, it can provide crucial historical information about their coping mechanisms, significant life events, personality traits, past experiences, all relevant to their current mental health and resilience. It helps you understand their story.
Okay.
Fourth, and fundamentally, always show profound respect for the individual's life experience and autonomy. Actively listen, validate feelings, acknowledge their wisdom, involve them in every possible decision about their care. Avoid infantilizing language or action.
Treat them like the adults they are.
Exactly. And finally, involve family members where appropriate. Family can provide incredibly valuable collateral information, especially if there are cognitive challenges or unique context.
But prioritize the patient's voice.
Always. Absolutely essential. Seek their consent to speak with family and ensure their wishes and preferences remain central.
So the implication for nursing students is clear. Mastering these communication techniques isn't just about being nice.
Not at all. It is an essential clinical competency. These skills are critical for building trust, ensuring you gather truly comprehensive and accurate data, and ultimately providing the most effective, dignified, person-centered patient care possible. They transform your interactions from transactional to truly therapeutic.
What an incredible comprehensive journey we've taken today. We started by really grasping those profound demographic shifts that make geriatric mental health such a central, critical area for your future nursing practice.
Mm-hmm. The context is everything.
Highlighting the immense privilege and responsibility of caring for this growing population. Then we meticulously delved into differentiating normal, individualized changes of aging, seeing it as natural, not pathological, from the common, complex mental health challenges older adults face, like depression, anxiety, dementia.
Unpacking the complexities of presentation.
Exactly. Learning to look beyond surface symptoms. And finally, we detail the comprehensive, holistic, multi-domain assessment approach, biophysical, psychological, social pillars, along with those practical, compassionate principles for conducting assessments effectively.
Mm-hmm.
This deep dive has really shown us that healthy, engaged aging is absolutely achievable, and that each individual ages uniquely with their own strengths, their own challenges.
That individuality is key.
So what does this all mean for you listening? It means you now possess a foundational understanding and hopefully a powerful toolkit to approach older adults with informed empathy, clinical precision, and profound respect, ready to make a significant positive difference in their lives.
And if we truly connect this to the bigger picture, mastering these comprehensive assessment skills, it isn't just about efficiently identifying problems or, you know, ticking boxes on a chart. It really transcends that.
Oh, so.
It's about actively advocating for the inherent dignity, the crucial autonomy, and the highest possible quality of life for every single older adult you encounter throughout your career. It challenges you to look beyond the illness, beyond the age, and to truly see the person within.
Mm-hmm.
Consider how this deeply holistic approach, understanding not just symptoms, but their whole life story, social context, spiritual beliefs, their enduring intellectual capacity, how that can fundamentally transform the experience of aging for your patients.
Yeah.
Your role, armed with this knowledge, isn't just about treating illness. It's about actively fostering thriving. By truly seeing the whole person, understanding their unique journey, respecting their individuality, you move beyond just managing conditions to profoundly enhancing their well-being, helping them navigate challenges, and empowering them to live their fullest, most meaningful lives, regardless of age.
That's a powerful final thought.
What greater contribution could there possibly be to the art and science of nursing?